Welcome to the Jewelry District, a podcast by JCK, brought to you by the De Beers Institute of Diamonds. Today, Rob Bates and Victoria Gamalski talk with Jean-Claude Beaver, president of JC Beaver.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Jewelry District. This is Victoria Gamalski, editor-in-chief of JCK and jckonline.com, calling in from Los Angeles, and I'm with
Rob Bates, news director of JCK and jckonline.com, calling in from New York City.
Hey Rob, I'm excited to see you soon. I'm coming to New York tomorrow.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Wow.
Tomorrow. I just got home from Milan yesterday, where I attended a fancy event with Audemars Piguet, and I'm heading to New York for all the events. By the time our listeners are hearing this, they will have ended, but of course it's the Gem Awards, 24 Karat Dinner, the JVC Luncheon, and a conference that Plum Club's organizing, so I am a busy bee this week.
Yes, me too.
Looking forward to seeing you. I'm really happy that on my one day in town, we had the opportunity to land maybe one of our more illustrious guests that we've ever had on this podcast. In the world of watchmaking, he is a true legend. That is not a word I throw around lightly. This is a man who has reshaped the industry, has a Harvard business school case study done on him and the way he has helped lift an industry out of the ashes, as it were. And if you don't know by now who I'm talking about, you certainly will when I tell you we've got Jean-Claude Beaver on the line, and he is calling in from a farmhouse in Geneva where he is now living close to him and his son, and they have a new brand, and he's here to talk to us about his history with watchmaking and, of course, this new brand that bears his very own name. So, Mr. Beaver, welcome. It is a true, true thrill to have you.
Thank you very much. It is a true, true pleasure that you have invited me. I'm very pleased to be with you now.
Yeah, you are really like the get in the world of watches. I think anybody who knows the world and knows the history of watches knows you and knows what you've done. And for our listeners that don't, we always start with a little background. So we'll work our way into what you're doing today. But, you know, we always like to hear from the get how you got into this business. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what your exposure was to watches at the very beginning. And then we can trace the milestones.
Okay, to make it very, very short, because I have started in the business exactly 50 years ago. So I'm a real veteran. There are very few people in the Swiss watch industry today that have been with me for the last 50 years. We have a lot of young people, thanks God, and we don't have people of my age, thanks God. We must have people of tomorrow. We don't need the people of yesterday. So, nevertheless, I am a man of yesterday. I was a hippie. I lived in a commune. In this commune, we were all students at the university, and we were only six people, so it was a very small community. And this community, we tried to understand the future. We tried to understand the world. And one day in 1967, on the 17th of June 1967, we heard for the first time a song that was done by the Beatles. It was on BBC, a show called Our World. The Beatles started the song, All We Need Is Love. And that was a revolution. We said, hey, now we know what the future will be. We have to behave like love. That means we have to love each other, but we have also to love our passion, to love our job. We have to be honest. That has guided me. And that was my religion, if I may say. That was the most important part of my life when I realized I am a man of the world and I must behave and I must share and I must respect and I should never lie. I must work. I must be honest. And that guided my life. But, where's your passion, Mr. Beaver? And I said, my passion, I don't know where it is. I have fun with my girlfriend. I have fun with drinking. I have fun with music. But where's my passion? And a friend of mine called Jacques Piguet, whose father and family had been more than 100 years in the watch business, he said to me, you know what? why don't you go to the watch business? I can introduce you with my reputation and thanks to my father, and we can find a job for you. Yes, please do that. And he did it, and he invited me on the 70th birthday of his father. And he presented me the big, big, big boss of AP, Audemars Piguet, Mr. Georges Gollet. And he said, hey, young man, where are you living? I said, I'm living in the Vallée de Joux, that's close to Audemars Piguet. And what do you want to do? I said, I'm looking for a job. Okay, on Monday, tomorrow, please come to my office at 3 o'clock. I came to the office at 3 o'clock, and you know what? He didn't give me a job. He said, you will sit next to the watchmaker masters. You will change the sitting every second day. You sit next to another watchmaker, and you will get the spirit. You will get the soul of making watches slowly, slowly through your eyes, through your ears. It will come into your blood. I came back home. I said to my wife, I will never go there. The guy is crazy. You know what he offered me? And he said, I forgot you will have a half salary because the other half is to pay me for what we are teaching you. And finally, my wife said, take the job. It's better than nothing. I took the job and I never left. And now 50 years later, I'm still in the business. Thanks to Mr. Gollet.
So what did you get out of that experience? And obviously that's not how people come into the watch industry today, but do you think that would be helpful for people to do what you did?
It would be helpful in a certain price range. If you are at Patek Philippe, if you are at AP or in my brand, then it's useful because we are not in the watch industry. We are in the watchmaking art. And art is different from the industry. Even if at the end, the product looks similar and the two products are giving you what time it is. But art is totally different. And I have learned the art. Very often since then, I had people coming from universities or Harvard Business School or London Business School, whatever. And some people, they just don't understand the difference between industry and art. And you must understand this, especially if you want to work in the art. Because if you want to work in the art, you must respect the art. For instance, the parts of the watch in the movement that you cannot see must be finished the same way as the ones that you see. It means you have to black polish a screw that nobody will ever see except the watchmaker who produces it. The head of the screw must be black polished. And that takes 47 minutes. And you have 93 screws in our movement. So 93 screws will need 47 minutes per screw to polish, to black polish the screw that nobody will ever see. And that doesn't change the quality, but it gives the soul. And that are little things that you must understand. And if you don't understand this, your future in the watch art will be limited.
This podcast is brought to you by Navoda. With access to over 1.6 million diamonds and gemstones and a team of experts to handle everything from QC to invoicing and shipping, Navoda's marketplace enables you to increase margins, focus on your customers, and grow your business. Navoda even helps you sell more with its powerful retail tools, allowing you to showcase its global diamond and gemstone inventory to your customers online and in store, so you'll always have what they're looking for. Book a demo now at Navoda.com/JD Podcast. That's Navoda.com/JD Podcast.
I mean, what you say is funny. You should write a book just on aphorisms on how to think about watches. But you didn't realize all this yet, right? You were working with Audemars Piguet. And then bring us to speed to Blancpain, because Blancpain.
And then I left AP in 1979 after having joined it in 74. In 79, I left and I went to Omega. And in Omega, I learned what's the industry, because AP was the artisan. AP was, and is still today, it's in the art. And Omega is fantastic but it's not art. And after 2 years, I said to myself, I don't want to stay in the industry. I want to get back the emotions of the art. And I bought, together with my friend Pigge, you know, the guy who presented me, his father, who then presented me the boss of AP, we bought a dead brand that had stopped to exist since 22 years. And we bought, we couldn't buy the brand because the brand wasn't existing anymore. There was no house, there was no factory, there was nothing. There was just the name. So we bought the name Blancpain. And Blancpain happened to be the oldest name in the Swiss watch history. And that was then my real start. From then, I was in the right place and I developed Blancpain. That was my first big, big success. But like usually, a big success has always somehow and somewhere and at some times a defeat. And in 1992, Blancpain was again a brilliant brand and I had done a fantastic job, but the big defeat came. My first wife, I'm married now two times. The second time I'm celebrating in 10 days my 26th anniversary with my second wife. And the big failure was that my first wife left and I sold Blancpain because I was so desperate. I said, f*** it, I sell the whole thing. And a few months or weeks later, I suddenly woke up and I realized, hey, what have you done? You have sold the company, you idiot. You have sold your soul. What have you done? And I called Mr. Hayek. And I said, Mr. Hayek, you have just bought Blancpain. Can I work at Blancpain? Can I still be CEO of Blancpain? He said, yes, I need you. And I need you also for Omega. You must help me to restructure Omega. And I said, but Mr. Hayek, I'm not a specialist. I don't understand so much. Yes, you understand about luxury and Omega. We are going up. And that was then my experience with Omega. And I stayed 12 years in Swatch Group. And after 12 years, I decided that I would leave Omega and I would buy Hublot. But Hublot was very healthy brand, was going not so bad, so I could not buy the whole thing. So they sold me 20% and they said, you can buy later a little bit more, you can increase your participation, which I did. But one day, because of the success of Hublot, LVMH came and the majority owner came back from the meeting and told me, Mr. Beaver, I have a good and a bad news. Which one do you want first? I said, the first, give me first the bad one. The bad one, I will not be able to sell you Hublot. I said, that's not possible. Come on. You told me from the beginning on that I could buy. No, you cannot. I'm sorry. I have a cancer. I had a family a meeting and my family decided I should sell. And we have an offer from LVMH. I said, what? Yes, we have an offer from LVMH. And that's the good news because they offer us a very good price and your participation now, you will be a millionaire. And I said, but that's not what I'm looking for. And I said, okay, at the end. And I sold my shares and I went on from 2008 to 1975. I went on with Omega under the ownership of LVMH.
Can we go back a little bit? Do you want to talk a little bit about some of your experiences at Omega and Hublot and Blancpain and why you think they were successful and how that informs what you're doing right now?
Yes, with Blancpain, it was easy because it was the moment where the whole industry believed that the future is called quartz. And people didn't realize that quartz watch has a lot of advantages, but it has also some disadvantage. The advantage of quartz, it's an extraordinary great quality. It has a very phenomenal accuracy, but it needs a battery. And it becomes old And after a certain period, you can even not repair it anymore because the batteries do not exist anymore, etc. So as I was a hippie, I believed the future for the watches would be back to the past. And what is yesterday? Yesterday is a watch that makes tick-tack, 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 a mechanical watch. That is the watch for the people who are hippies like me, the new generation. They will have a sensitivity for what is mechanical. And that is exactly what happened. And Blancpain was the first to come out with a mechanical watch.
Was it hard to convince your colleagues or anybody that you were trying to hire? Because this was the very end of the quartz crisis. This was early 80s. Half of the Swiss watch industry, the mechanical industry, had been decimated. People
yes.
were unemployed. Brands were falling and had fallen over the decade. So how did you convince people that you were right?
I convinced the Credit Suisse Bank because I needed their support. I wanted to have $30,000. They lend me $30,000. And when I was in Zurich at the meeting, they asked me the same question. What do you mean? What are you going to do? And by chance, I had a Mont Blanc pen with ink because I love writing with a pen. And I had took this pen and I said, "You see this pen?" And everybody said, "Oh, yes, yes." And this pen is with ink. And each time you use it, you have ink on your fingers. But it has something extraordinary. When you write, it shows your personality. And when you write with another instrument, it doesn't show nothing. And that is the same with a mechanical watch. A mechanical watch will also show your personality, that you understand something, that you are linked to history. The mechanical watch of my father, who died before dying, he said to me, "My son, I give you my watch." I said, "Oh, Papa, thank you very much." And he said, "You must be careful with this watch because it comes from 1947 when your mother, my future wife, gave it to me as a fiancé present. And this watch will be from now on yours." Wow, I cried. I said, "Thank you." And you know what? I still have the watch, and the watch still works. That is a piece of eternity. Nobody can compete eternity. Eternity has no competition, and eternity is forever. And that was my promotion of Blancpain. So I promoted at the same time the mechanical watch. And this positioning was very successful. And the hippie generation, they understood. And when they made money, they started to wear watches again. And that is now, even now, we can see the young people are buying watches. Of course, a certain proportion are buying swatches or quartz watches. But you have more and more and more and more people buying mechanical watches.
This podcast is brought to you by the De Beers Institute of Diamonds. The De Beers Institute of Diamonds' mission is to grow and strengthen consumer confidence by providing integrity across the natural diamond industry, offering unrivaled diamond grading and testing exclusively for natural, untreated diamonds. The De Beers Institute of Diamonds provides diamondaires with confidence in a report of each diamond's 4 Cs. Every diamond graded at De Beers Institute of Diamonds is also given a unique inscription number, allowing the diamond's details to be tracked and viewed on their website. Visit institute.debeers.com to learn more and register for their grading services.
Do you want to kind of quickly talk a little bit about Omega and Ubo?
What I did as Omega is in my days, more an industrial brand. I said the industry doesn't need necessarily art as a promoter. It needs people. And I developed a people's brand. It means I took Cindy Crawford. Cindy is still the spokesperson for Omega. Today, that was the start of the people's concept of promoting. And after Cindy, we said we also need a man. Which man? And we said, we have to take James Bond. He's a legend. And if you have James Bond and Cindy, the two spokespeople for your brand, you have nearly succeeded. Because people admire Cindy, at least. And women were not so much jealous about Cindy. Because she was, when we took her, already 32, 33 years old, which is not old, but in those days, people thought that's already old. She was very discreet. I mean, she didn't make women jealous. And that was very important. If you take a woman, don't take a woman that men love. Take a woman that women like. And that women respect. And that was the case with Cindy. So Cindy was a phenomenal ambassador for all our Constellation collection. And James Bond was a fantastic ambassador for our men's collection. And then also I took back the moon, because in 1994, people said, yeah, but the moon, that's an old story. And I said, no, it's still actual, and it's still actual today even. So the Moonwatch helped us a lot also.
Meaning, of course, the Speedmaster and its journey to the moon in 1969.
That's phenomenal.
You want to give us a quick pitch for your new company and talk a little bit about the future?
We are trying to be first, different, and unique. And to be first, different, and unique in the watch, it happens through the soul. And to have a watch, to bring the soul into a watch, you need perfection. Without being perfect, the soul will never get out of the watch. And we need the soul. So we need to master all the parts, even the ones that are not visible, as I said before. We want to master the invisibility. The invisibility is, for me, the supreme luxury. It's the luxury that only the owner can see. That is the real luxury. The luxury is in what you cannot see. And the soul you cannot see. Love you cannot see. If you meet me on the street, if we drink a coffee, you cannot see my passion. Eventually, after 10 minutes, you can say, this guy is crazy, or this guy is a real whatever, passionate. But the passion cannot see, and the soul you cannot see. And that is what we do. And that is why we did 11 watches last year. This year, we will produce 15. And that's the beauty. That's the real luxury. The real luxury is not the one you can see. It's very often the one you don't see.
You want to quickly give us the name of your company, and you have a website, I guess, right?
Yes, the name of the company is my name, Biver.
Mr. Beaver, this has been such a pleasure and such an honor to have you on. I really hope you're working on a book about your experiences and your insights, because, you know, every time I speak to you, you share something new that I think is so worthwhile and so valuable for those of us in the luxury world, in the watch world, and in life in general, really need to hear. So thank you again, and all the best. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Jewelry District. I'm Natalie Comet, the producer of the podcast. Our editor is Riley McCaskill. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you may listen. Any views expressed in this podcast do not reflect the opinion of JCK, its management, or its advertisers. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us next time on The Jewelry District by JCK.